Well, good morning. This is Carolyn Murray with the KBCW Local News Hour. I've got my first guest, Tom Fisher, the Summit County Manager. He's on the line. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Carolyn. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, thank you. And you?
I'm doing awesome as well.
I hope you're not avoiding me. Usually you're in the studio.
No, we had our first conversation with council for this week out at Dana's restaurant in the Jeremy Ranch area. So I'm just doing it from my car.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, let's start off. I'd like to ask a little bit about the agenda item with respect to the food trucks. And what does this mean? I know that there was some legislation this year at the state, and it possibly has instigated our county to make some changes in what we will allow in terms of food truck businesses and licensing. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Well, just a tiny bit. I'm not totally up to date on what the Planning Commission is contemplating there. That, of course, is on the Planning Commission agenda for today, not on the council's agenda for tomorrow. But yes, there was some change in legislation this year in regards to food truck regulation and what local governments, including counties, are able to regulate. And so the Planning Commission had already been talking about that issue as that legislation was put in place. So I think they've relooked at it again and will be contemplating the county's zoning ordinance in regards to that legislation. I haven't even read the staff report on that to know where our staff is coming out on that. But you know, food trucks are an interesting issue, of course, because they do provide somewhat of a cheaper food option for some folks. But there are also not only zoning regulations in regards to those and where they're located and where they're allowed to be located, but also the health department and the health board has some regulation over that in regards to food handling and food preparation. So a very complex issue. That doesn't sound like it should be complex, but it is.
Yeah. So do you anticipate that the Planning Commission will decide that food trucks can go just about anywhere in Kimball or the city?
I have no idea. You know, it's not just Kimball. It's the zoning ordinance probably contemplates the whole Snyderville Basin planning area in regards to those types of activities. But I'm not clear on where the Planning Commission is going on that one at this point. Our best point of contact on that will be Pat Putt.
Yeah, we'll have to follow up with that and see where things are. I imagine with the summer season coming up, it's going to be something that a lot of food truck licensees would want to try to get resolved and that kind of thing.
Well, absolutely, and it's a statewide issue. I'm sure most counties are dealing with this right now in regards to this new legislation.
Yeah. It looks like the second item on the agenda is the annexation petition, and this involves Colville City and a couple of parcels of about, somewhere around 40 acres?
So this is a standard process that a property owner that is outside of a city limit that is wants certain kinds of density that perhaps the county zoning doesn't allow, but the city would, as well as city services like water, sewer, those types of things. Those types of properties are encouraged to annex into municipalities, and so this one is on the border of the current city limit of Colville. It's in their annexation boundary. They've applied to be part of Colville City. I would guess for future development, but that's not guaranteed. It's east of the, I believe it's just east of the Colville Cemetery area off of Chalk Creek Road. Colville has indicated approval of this annexation, so the county could protest if we chose to. I believe this one will upheld by the county council.
And has density been granted already
I don't believe so. I don't know. That is not part of the annexation petition that comes to the county. That's a city process, so that's up to Colville City, so you'll have to ask them.
Okay, great. Hey, I like the declaration about making May Older Americans Month, and I'm just wondering,
Absolutely. What
does that mean, and who are they? We.
Well, I'm sure that AARP has a definition that I qualify for being a senior. I certainly get the mailings, but it's really about recognition of the fact that we have older citizens that live in our communities that perhaps we provide different kinds of services for that perhaps need different kinds of services. And acknowledging not only those that are older Americans, but those that are helping older Americans live their lives and how they choose to. So that's really what this recognition is about. And, the county and our municipalities do provide some services to our seniors, as well as a lot of nonprofits and other organizations. And we just want to acknowledge that.
Okay. And then it looks like UDOT is coming in to talk about the row over the noise wall, and the Citizens Against the Wall have asked if they could come and give input again. And it appears that setting is not the setting that you guys want to pursue. I feel like this whole conversation is a he said she said type of situation. I mean, the CATW, the Citizens Against the Wall people, have said UDOT has not calculated properly. UDOT doesn't really address that accusation, but they just refer back to, this is what we've done and this is what we're moving ahead with. They have a fair amount of autonomy.
I think this is a very interesting issue in that. I would never propose to speak for UDOT, but they have been very clear with both the Citizens Against the Wall and ourselves and the community at large through news sources that they believe that all of the work that they've done to prove the need for this project and this portion of this project, the sound wall, that everything is correct. And even to the point that our council last week or the week before questioned some of their staff and their attorneys as to the accuracy of their calculations and their interpretation of their own policy. And UDOT is very satisfied that they are correct. Now, that being said, it puts the county council in a very precarious position because they really don't have any jurisdiction here. They could certainly take if the county council believed that UDOT was being arbitrary or capricious, I suppose they could take legal action against UDOT. But again, UDOT has been projecting very high confidence that they are correct. So the last conversation that both Kim Carson and Roger Armstrong had with the UDOT staff, which again was about 2 weeks ago, they presented UDOT presented an option that would involve a very elaborate berming system that would require right-of-way purchase, and it's an option, obviously, but it's an incredibly expensive option. About eight times the cost of what they have proposed as part of the project. So perhaps not in the feasible range, but we're going to hear about that tomorrow, as well as a berm option that they could do within the right-of-way that they have, but does not satisfy the decibel reduction that is required as part of that policy. So in order to do something smaller like that, they'd have to re-ballot all of the receptors in order to approve a lesser option. So that's the kind of discussion that's going to go on, or at least what UDOT is going to describe to the council. The council doesn't have any decision-making authority here. It's just going to be a discussion of how UDOT might proceed, and so it's agended as a work session item. Obviously, usually work session items don't take public input, which is why the citizens have asked that question, and so we'll see what happens there.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, we work very hard to identify and regulate zoning and heights and setbacks and view corridors and preservation of all of those, you know, parts of living in the mountains. Yet it just seems that UDOT decides this needs to happen and there's no real challenging that can go on. It's just very autonomous.
I would say that's correct. However, the folks that are directly affected by that increase in noise have had input into this. They were folks that got to vote as part of the policy, and those folks are just as important as the citizens against the wall, it seems as if not everybody has an equal voice in this one, and I think that's what makes it difficult.
Yeah. Well, let's just move on to one final topic, which is fire prevention and awareness.
Absolutely.
It looks probably
the most important thing on the agenda.
Yep. Save the most important for last. We've got a drought returning to the area. We've had a low snow year. We've had above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation, although I don't know if that's still the case through the month of May. But tell us what is going on with the county with respect to prevention and building awareness throughout the community.
Sure, Will. I will start with, I am not disappointed by any raindrop that's falling these days in the month of May or the month of June. I'll take everything we can get. And if I do complain, please challenge me on that. But, we're doing a lot of different stuff. Of course, we're preparing all of our professionals that deal with fire and wildfire and the prevention of that so that they're all certified. And one of the interesting things this year is our state law has now required that even our public works bulldozer operators that would be called in to do fire breaks if a serious fire did occur now have to be what's called red card certified or certified to be part of a fire crew. So we're working on that to comply with the law. So that's kind of our basic preparation and getting all of our fire districts to talk to each other and make sure that we're all clear on what's going to happen. And then even having meetings with our law enforcement and the federal agencies that regulate federal land in the county to understand and review all of our evacuation policies in case of wildfire in certain areas. And then our wildland fire warden is also out meeting with homeowners associations, places like Summit Park, Jeremy Ranch, and other places on the east side of the county, Camas and Oakley and woodland areas, in order to make sure that they're reviewing their plans and making sure that their citizens are up to date on what they can do to help ward off or prevent fire from spreading, and then what to do in the case of a fire. So that's what we're doing out there with the citizens, and then we're also preparing our leadership in order to be ready for a tough fire season, perhaps. We're reviewing the procedures of declaring, it's my role as the county manager, if there's a large fire, to declare an emergency if it's beyond our ability to fight it. We'll review those procedures, and we'll review the procedures with our county council so that they know what their county government will be doing in case of a wildfire and what their role is within that. So it's that time of year. We do this every year, no matter what the level of danger is, but we're very cognizant of the danger this year.
Has the county made any decisions on fireworks, drones, open burning regulations for the season yet?
The thing is that the counties traditionally do not have the same authorities that cities do in regards to regulating those activities. There were some changes to state law this year, and we're still reviewing that so that specifically myself and the attorney's office and the sheriff know exactly what we are able to regulate in regards to those changes in the law. Traditionally, counties have not had the authority to put those restrictions in the unincorporated county. The state fire warden has had that authority. You'll remember last year there was some fireworks bans and fire bans in the later part of the summer that were instituted by the state fire warden. But cities do have that authority. And so it's a different question for them right now than it is for the county. But anything that we do have the ability to regulate in that regard, this would be a year that we would have to be reviewing that and look at that. But I'm not clear on whether we do have that ability at this point.
Well, we'll keep asking. It's a big issue
Absolutely. This
season.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, I think we'll have to leave it there, Tom. Thank you so much. Appreciate you calling in.
Thanks a lot, Carolyn.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good morning. You're listening to the Local News Hour. My next guests in the studio are two Park City High School students, Adam Herbst and Faith Staley, and they are going to tell us about an event they've organized for May 31st. It will be at the Jim Santee Auditorium, and I am wondering if this is a first ever gun debate in Park City, Summit County. I don't know. Maybe you know the answer to that, but welcome.
Thank you, Carolyn.
So tell us a little bit. I mean, I think I can understand maybe what has prompted you to bring this about, but why don't you give us a little background on that?
So both of us were involved with the organization of both the March for Our Lives and the Park City High School Student Walkout for Gun Control. And so when we were working for final projects on this class that we're in which we organized the march and the walkout, we sort of decided that we wanted to continue the discussion around gun control and gun violence, and so we decided to organize a town hall with candidates running for state and House Senate.
Interesting. Okay. And Adam, can you talk a little bit about the politics around this conversation, and just how do you take that out of it? How do you take the conversation about, you know, safe gun practices and the right to bear arms and all of those, you know, constitutional issues that go along with it?
Well, we kind of want to put the politics more so into it. We want people to kind of realize that, we're bringing candidates that are very local candidates. You know, we have people running for Senate District 26 and House District, I believe, 53. And we're bringing, you know, local candidates because we think that they will definitely have a larger impact on our actual policy and on our actual enforcement of said policy. But we want to put politics back into it, actually, because we want to extend the politics of this a little bit more, because, you know, it is kind of a social issue, being that, you know, people need to practice, you know, safe gun usage and things like that. But also we need to realize that some change needs to happen. And this is, we want people to talk to their, you know, candidates and see what change that, you know, those candidates are going to actually be enforcing and kind of promoting instead of leaving the issue as a stagnant kind of just thing, as a stagnant kind of issue, where we want them to see how candidates are going to address it in their own individual ways. You know, I'm sure Logan Wilde and like Megan Miller are gonna address it in very, very like different ways. But we want to make sure that people will see that, and we'll see how potentially effective those policies might be in the future.
So let's talk about the panel. Will there be multiple representation there? Will it include students or teachers or local law enforcement, or are we just bringing candidates in, people who are running for office?
We just have, I believe, four candidates right now. Logan Wilde, Megan Miller, Kathy Callow-Huser, I can never get her name right, and Chris Neville on Skype. We might be getting some other candidates, but it's kind of up in the air with some of them. Tim Quinn specifically, he said that he was going to get back to Adam Hickey about a week ago, and he said that he was going to get back to him in a couple days, but it's been a week now, so we're kind of waiting on some of them. But those are our main four that we have confirmed right now. We have invited the local law enforcement and multiple teachers and multiple organizations. We have the Black Lives Matter for Salt Lake City. We have Planned Parenthood's Policy Action Council, I believe that's what it's called. We have Connect and CTC coming for communities that care and connect, trying to show multiple like facets of the issue. So we want to bring all of those organizations in, but though those organizations won't be speaking, they just might have little booths set up at the beginning of the event so that people can kind of introduce themselves to those organizations and learn about what they're about and then kind of see how they play into gun control and gun violence prevention as a whole. But the panel itself will just be the candidates.
Interesting. So it really is staying politics. I mean, you're sticking with that. I read in the paper the three Republican district, Senate District 26 candidates were asked in a debate just recently about the Second Amendment and gun control. And all three responses pretty much sounded to me like there is no bending. I mean, basically, it was black and white for them. There is no gray. So how do you expect to even make any headway on discussing the issue when you have a state like Utah, where it always goes red? It's a conservative place, and people are very, you know, very exercised about their right to have guns and use them.
Well, we're hoping to sort of create more of a respectful debate than we've heard at the national level or even maybe on the local level. But we really just want it to be a conversation. And, you know, maybe if they won't bend, then that is what we're learning. That is the conversation. I mean, this is sort of just to help people get informed about who they're voting for on a more local level, because national elections get lots and lots of publicity, but oftentimes the local ones don't get as much. So we're sort of trying to help people get informed, and if that's the position that the Republicans are holding, then people at least know that, and they know what they're voting for exactly when they're going to vote in June and then November.
So how do you anticipate talking about issues during the debate? Will there be audience participation, or is it something that will just involve preset questions, or what's your thought process on that?
We're planning to have a few preset questions to sort of open the discussion up, and then it will be open for community questions from the audience after that.
Okay. And so, again, we're looking at May 31st. That's a Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's 5:30 to 7?
7:30.
Okay. So you're giving it a couple hours.
Yes.
Yeah. And anything else that you two would like to say about the event and about what you're hoping to get out of conducting this? NA on your papers or your projects? That I'm sure. What class is it that you're doing this for?
Our social change class. It just started off this year, and it's going to be a lot larger for next year. And we've covered like a bunch of issues, but our specific group has kind of steered more towards gun violence and the politics about that, with like, you know, just doing a town hall. Other groups have, you know, a lot of other a lot of issues that they're tackling and having, and then are presenting on, and things like that. But we just wanted to maybe involve our community a little bit more.
Yeah, well, and it's also really timely with the really tragic events of Santa Fe, Texas, and what has happened there since Friday, another mass shooting, and it's got to be kind of at the top of everyone's mind right now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in and giving us this update, and we will look forward to this debate next week, and
thank you.
Yeah, good work.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Good morning. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Our last guest is Bill Rock. He's the Chief Operations Officer with Vail Resorts, Park City Mountain, and he's going to give us a bit of a wrap-up of the winter season and then let us know about all of the events going on for the summer, which I was, Bill, reading through last night. And if we were going to talk about all of them, I think I'd have to have about, I don't know, 15 pages. So we're going to have to limit that a little bit. But yes, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah, so let us just start with the skier situation. I know we're kind of well into summer with especially, oh gosh, Memorial Day coming up. It sounds like a lot of things are going to be opening up at the base of the Park City Mountain Resort. But let's talk a little bit about skiing, Epic Pass. It's recognized worldwide. Boy, there are places now, what, 7, 8, 9 places in Japan you can ski. This is the first year that I have heard so many people saying, I just got back from Japan. And it's just going on and on about how amazing the skiing is there. And why don't you give us a rundown of just what is available for Epic Pass holders and what your season was like?
Yeah, great. Thank you, Carolyn. Again, great to be here. And, you know, the season, you know, I've been in the ski business 22 years, so I've seen amazing seasons and I've seen, you know, less than great seasons. This year was good. I think if people reflected on it, they might think, oh my gosh, the snowfall was lower than we would expect here in Park City. And yet our guests had an amazing time. Our employees just did a terrific job across the board delivering great experiences from really beginning to end. It really speaks to the investments that we've made in snowmaking over the years and the talent of our team, and who really went above and beyond in many instances to deliver a great season. And you mentioned the Epic Pass, and that's the beauty of the Epic Pass. It's this network of resorts, both here in North America and internationally. And people can, you know, they can follow snow, they can come to Park City and have this complete vacation. And it really has revolutionized the ski industry and how people access resorts. And you know, we're thrilled to have been a pioneer in that, and it's a product that, you know, people just love.
Yeah. So, talk about a little bit if you were to look at the mix of skier days and who's coming to our resorts locally here, do you have a number on how many are Epic Pass holders compared to just people who walk up and buy a day pass or that type of thing?
Yeah, you know, I think we think everyone should have an Epic Pass. It is the best way to ski. It's the best way to access our mountain. We don't really disclose kind of the mix, I guess I would say, of the skier days. But, you know, just being in town, you know, this is a compelling destination. People want to be in Park City, whether they have an Epic Pass or not. They're here because of the place, because of the mountains, the snow that we get. And so, you know, it's a compelling destination with a booming economy, and so we're a busy place.
Okay. And do you want to talk anything about the 2018-19 Epic Pass and the new additions as far as resorts
Sure.
that have been added?
Yeah, thank you, Carolyn. I would. First, I think one of the biggest pieces of news about our pass is the military pass. So if you're active duty military, your pass next year is $99. And also we're making some donations to Wounded Warrior Project and Operation Homefront as well for every pass sold. And if you're a veteran or a dependent, it's $4.99. So not only is the Epic Pass a great deal at $8.99 for the full Epic Pass, but this military pass, if you're a veteran, active duty military, National Guard, it really is a compelling offer. And we just want to give back to that community who serves our country. In terms of resorts, incredible resorts. We've got access to our partner resorts, Telluride, Crested Butte, Back East, Okemo, Mount Sunapee, resorts of the Canadian Rockies, which is up in Banff area. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Carolyn, in Japan, not to mention all the amazing resorts in our network, including Whistler Blackcomb, Vail, Beaver Creek, Breckenridge, Keystone, and here in Park City. And, of course, I left out Tahoe. So, really, it's an incredible offering in every region, mostly in North America. And, you know, it's the best value in skiing.
Okay. Well, let's move on to summertime.
Sure.
Okay. So, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what is being offered? You've got live music, mountain biking, fireworks, it looks like, I guess, if it's allowed. I don't know. Just after talking with Tom Fisher at the county, Park City and Wasatch Back fire threat is a little bit high this year. So anyway, adventure parks, adventure pass. Tell us a little bit about what you think is, you know, something that is the most compelling offering this summer.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. We know that all of us in Park City love our summer. I mean, summer is great. And so the whole menu that you just went through is a reflection of just the variety of activities that we have to offer. It's exciting. And actually a little bit hard to believe that we're opening for summer here on the 25th with a payday lift. So we'll have bike hall, scenic lift rides starting then, but we'll also open the golf this weekend. And then June 15th, we'll open the whole operation. Also this week, we'll open up the adventure park, the Park City Mountain Adventure Park, which includes alpine slides, zip line, all the kids' activities at the base of Park City Mountain. So we're ramping up here to full operation on June 15th. And as you mentioned, tons of concerts, both on the Canyons Village side and in the Park City side, and something for everybody to do almost every day all summer.
Yeah. So what about the golf? Is there a locals pass for golf at the Kenyans or?
Yeah, I got to look. Like you said, there's so many things. You know, I don't have everything memorized.
Okay.
But yeah, there. If you go on parkcitymountain.com, check on the golf. There's local options there for daily play as well as season's passes.
Okay. And then what about like passes for riding the lifts if you want to do scenic rides or hike or bike? Are those Epic passes applicable at all for riding those lifts during the summer?
Yeah, for the bike hall season's pass, which is an incredible deal, is $119. So if you're local here and you want to ride Crescent Lift or Red Pine Gondola to get up to the trail network, $119, you know, gets you as many rides on the lift with your bike as you want. It's really a bargain.
Okay. And you've got, there were some things that happened earlier in the season, an announcement about the Canyon Mountain Bike Park, that was shutting down. And I'm just wondering, is there a plan to replace that or what's the strategic piece on that?
Sure. Yeah, thanks. We did announce that earlier in the year. And really, it's a reflection of that part of the business. You know, mountain biking is a vast, you know, activity that people do. And our lifts are designed to service really the trail network that we have in town here. And like I just mentioned, the bike hall, the downhill park was very specific to downhill biking. And really, as we assess business needs and demand, we determined that it was not something that, you know, had a lot of demand. And so we're exiting that business right now.
Okay, and then some trail changes. I've heard a rumor that Jenny's will open this year again. Open, I mean, up at the top part where the grading was being done.
Yeah, so, yeah, as you referenced, we had a big grading project up there in Treasure Hollow, and so Jenny's will be restored back to its original route. And, you know, we work really closely with Mountain Trails. I meet with Charlie 2-3 times a year, and those guys have been fantastic partners. They clearly have created this amazing trail network in this community along with others. And so we work very closely on any decisions about rerouting or improving trails and that sort of thing with those guys because they're the experts.
Yeah. I, for one, am really excited about that opening.
That's good.
One of my favorite areas. And then let's talk a little bit about music. So you said there are going to be performances going throughout the summer at both villages, Canyons and Park City Mountain. And so what is the story on that? Are there going to be free concerts?
Yeah, so particularly on the Canyon side, you know, in the Forum area there where the stage is, there'll be some free concerts. We're looking at announcing a lineup soon. We'll be doing Saturday concerts there for sure. And then in the Park City base will be more, you know, what I would call entertainment-type music, you know, folks up on the outdoor stage just playing as people interact with the activities.
Okay, and what's the policy on picnics and bringing in your picnic if that's what you want to do or if you want to bring in your own drinks or that type of thing?
Yeah, you know, that's been something that's been allowed at the Canyons for a while there for those outdoor concerts, and that'll continue this summer.
Okay. But not so much at the base of Park City Mountain. You're not going to be, ideally, that's not what you want to do.
I mean, people bring food in there all the time, and that's fine, and those that music is more entertainment, I would say, than a big, you know, kind of sit on the lawn concert type. Mm-hmm. type of thing.
So people are kind of eating and sitting outside and grabbing a beer or whatever.
Going for a hike, doing an activity.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And fireworks, that is a tradition, I know.
Yeah.
How does all that work? And especially if it does turn out that things are as bad as what is being predicted for, and let's say the city does ban them for the season, what happens then? Do you guys as a commercial operation still get to proceed or?
Depends. You know, we work very closely with the fire department. Obviously fire and a wildland fire would be something that would be catastrophic in our community, and we certainly wouldn't want we would do our part to make sure that didn't happen. If the fire department determined it wasn't safe to do fireworks, we wouldn't do fireworks. The good news is we've announced we're going to do fireworks on the Canyons Village side with our partners, the Canyons Village Master Association, to do fireworks again on the 3rd of July, which was kind of a tradition that went away for a couple of years. It's coming back. So those folks in the neighborhoods around there who enjoy those fireworks will have another show. And then fireworks scheduled again July 4th at the Park City Base. So we've got two fireworks shows this summer. And again, we work very closely with the fire department. They actually permit our shows. If they were determined it wasn't safe, then the show would be canceled.
Yeah, okay. Anything else you want to add?
No, it's great. I really appreciate the time. Thanks to the community here in Park City for all your support. Thanks to our employees who just do a tremendous job every day. And thank you for being here and having us in.
Thanks so much for coming in, Bill.
Thanks.